This week's episode is sponsored by Smart Home. Looking to simplify your life? Whether it's planning your week or just remembering where your appointments are, Smart Home can help with that. They provide everything from personal assistants like Google Home or Alexa to automated lighting systems and security cameras like Ring for your home. Their products are affordable, easy-to-program devices that communicate over your home's existing wiring and over radio frequency signals. That means that your appointments are always remembered and that your house is always safe. As a thank you for listening to our podcast, you can use the discount code NERD10, that's NERD10, at checkout for 10% off on their website, smarthome.com. You can follow them at Smart Home on Instagram and at Smart Home Inc. on Twitter.
Hey, it's Kapil Tallwalker. You're about to listen to my interview on Pop Nerd Lounge.
Hello, dear nerds. Welcome to Pop Nerd Lounge, the podcast for the creative soul. I'm your host, Steph Pham. I can't believe we're here, the season 6 finale. If you want to be updated on when our new season drops, make sure you follow us wherever you listen to podcasts. Today's guest is on the hit NBC dramedy Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist. He plays the character Tobin, Zoe's work colleague that's always full of surprises. We talk about his career as an actor, why representation matters, and he gives me the details of what it's like to be on Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist. This is Kapil Tallwalker. Welcome to Pop Nerd Lounge. My guest today is Kapil Tallwalker. Kapil, thank you so much for joining me.
Yeah, of course. Happy to be here.
My first question is kind of an icebreaker. You're throwing a dinner party. What are you serving? Like, what's on the menu? Who are your guests? And what music are you playing?
Okay. If I'm throwing a dinner party, who are my guests? Well, it depends. What is the occasion? Just a general dinner party?
Yeah, just a kind of like a casual weekend dinner party.
Okay, a casual weekend dinner party. I usually really love to have a lot of different people from different aspects of my life. So, you know, a couple people from my Zoe's fam, a few people from like my OG friend group that I met in college, and you know, some of my friends from my acting program that I studied in. And I like to bring sort of different groups of people together and connect people and try to find ways that we can all have fun under like a game night sort of theme. So yeah, I'd probably make some like Indian food that probably my mom would have taught me when I was a kid. That's one of my favorite things to make. And I'd probably play some Billy Joel or maybe some, I like a lot of old music. I'm rediscovering a lot of old music. So probably some of the classics. Yeah.
Sounds like a great dinner party. Have you ever played Secret Hitler at the board game Secret Hitler?
I love Secret Hitler.
Oh my God. It's like one of my favorite games out there.
It's such a great Secret Hitler, Mafia, Resistance. And then there's like the online version now. I think it's called Push the Button. Jackbox Games has it. It's so good. It's not exactly like Secret Hitler, but there's a lot of like sussing out who the spies are. So it's a lot of fun.
I can't imagine playing that with like a bunch of actors because you'll never know who the heck is Hitler or like the fascist.
If I want to win, I never invite my actor friends because it's impossible.
Right. All right. We're going to talk about your acting background. Well, being an Asian American myself, I know how hard it is for parents to understand our craft. Since both you and your sister are in the entertainment business, how did you navigate those conversations with your parents?
Persistency. Standing by your self-belief when sometimes you may not necessarily get the support that you need. It's very hard to do that sometimes alone. But I will say that like lowering the bar for what your parents' expectations are is one of the most important things, because I think Asian Americans, South Asian Americans, such as myself, I think have a lot of preconceived notions as to what success is. And oftentimes it's attributed to hard results, right? If you're a doctor, there's a ladder. If you're a lawyer, there's a ladder. If you're an engineer, there's a ladder that you climb. With acting, it's not so cut and dry. With any sort of artistic profession, it's not so cut and dry. So I think if you as an artist can come to just the terms of like, hey, I may not have the traditional version of success that my parents might see me, but I'm doing it because of the artistic fulfillment. And whether I have to have a separate job or a separate hustle to make that fulfillment happen, at the end of the day, I'm living my days with a lot of happiness and fulfillment. And as long as I'm not caring about what other people are thinking about my profession, this and that, then at the end of the day, like, that's the most, that is the reward to truly be able to do this, whether it's on, whether it's a small play or whether it's, you know, something on NBC. Regardless, I get the same amount of fulfillment from it because I'm creating and having a platform to create. So, and also not taking your parents' money. The quicker you do not do that, the quicker you do that, the quicker you find your own financial independence, the quicker you can say, the quicker you can have a sense of footing and confidence in your own self. And be like, okay, actually, like, thanks, but like, I'm an adult now. I don't need you. I can make my decisions. I love you, but like, I'm going to go live my life, you know? So there's that.
And honestly, like, I know how difficult it is. I've had several conversations back and forth with my parents, how they're like trying to make me navigate to a different field. Even they're like, hey, why don't you consider like nursing? Do you want to go back to school and you want to go nursing? But it's just like sticking to your guns and being like, no, even if I have to, like you said, financially find another way to supplement myself, I still want to do what I love, because it, at the end of the day, it makes me happy. Like you said, as long as we're creating and we're finding joy in that, then that's what we have to stick to and be persistent with. Absolutely. Yeah.
Patience. It's a long game. I'm going to be doing this till I'm 90. Maybe I'm not, but I'm going to, like, I'm thinking as if I am. And maybe at some point in time, I'll feel it's not right for me, but at least I have an autonomy over my own sort of decision-making. And that is, I think, at the end of the day, more important than anything else.
What was a yes in your career that changed your life?
A yes in my career that changed my life. Oh, I think there was three yeses in my career that changed my life. I would say four. First yes was, I didn't get cast in a play in ninth grade that I had auditioned for a Catholic high school I was in. And I really just wanted to be in the ensemble, part of the experience. I moved high schools to a public high school and was immediately cast as a supporting character in a comedy. That was the first yes, because it opened a path of like, hey, I could do this and I can have the opportunity to do this. Not only, hey, I might have a talent for doing this. And that cultivated a relationship with my high school drama teacher that helped me see that this was right for me. Then I got cast in a big play in LA called Animals Out of Paper. And once I got cast in that, I got confidence that, and that was a lead role at East West Players, which is an Asian American theater company in Los Angeles. It is, you know, world renowned. It's incredible. And places I've performed there before now a couple of times. But that yes gave me the confidence that I could do it at a professional level. And then 2 years ago, I'd booked a pilot after having a lot of no's in Hollywood. I booked a pilot called False Prophets. Kayla Alpert had created a show, and it was a series regular role on this show, and it was funny, and there was like a musical element to it, and that gave me the confidence that I could beat out thousands of people in Los Angeles to be able to do it. So there's like different hoops that of my own confidence that I had to jump through to realize that like I deserve to be here.
You said in an interview that you're all about representing South Asians in a positive light. And I love that, because we definitely need more proper representation of like the Asian community in media. Yeah. So do you hope that your portrayal of Tobin will open more doors for South Asian actors to not be pigeonholed to stereotypical roles?
I really hope so. And I'm very grateful for Austin to create a character and give an opportunity to a South Asian American, whereas if we could have really gone anyway, it could have gone to another white dude, and it didn't. And so, you know, I think I'm very grateful for Austin to see me in this role and to see my humanity in it. Not just the fact that I'm an Indian American person, but my humanity fits into this part. And as a result, that opens the door for other Indian Americans to go and see like, hey, wait a second. Like, that guy's not like, you know, like, the stereotypical Indian American dude on television. He's not you know, driving Uber, running a convenience store, or like, you know what I mean? He's like a fun bro-y dude. Yes, albeit there's an element that he's a coder, but like that is, in terms of like the coder idea, it's the last thing that describes and defines Tobin. You know, he's in the truest sense, such a fun, goofy, full of life character that in other television shows, I'm yet to sort of see that sort of like a character written like that for an Indian American person. So, I mean, I'm sure there are a few, but like it's not frequent, right? So the more we see that, the more we're exposed to that, the more we've normalized that, the more opportunities it opens for other Indian Americans, other South Asians, and hopefully just other people of color. Yeah.
I love that because like, it's very hard for, especially in these days, to nail the POC voice without disrespecting it. Because, I mean, I don't know how many POC people are in writers' rooms. And that's where it starts. That's where the voice starts. And so it's very hard to kind of give respect to the POC communities. And to see somebody like Tobin, it just makes me like so refreshed and so happy about that and be like, this could open so many more doors to other communities to be represented properly in media.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I think it does start in the writer's room and it starts at a creator level, to be able to think and hire people that you have seen growing up around you. Often people like to tell stories that are close to their own hearts. So I understand that, you know, Black communities like to tell stories about Black characters and Indian communities like to tell stories about Indian characters, you know? So I think the more people of color heads and creators that we see in Hollywood, the more the diversity is going to be deeper. It's not going to be like the icing on the cupcake. Right. If we have the creators and people of color, it's going to be the whole cupcake. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Auditioning is never a fun process. And I've had experience with that growing up in theater. But what's something that you find helps you deliver a solid audition? And what advice would you give to budding actors who are constantly auditioning, waiting for that break?
I would say find it. Do your research. I think number one. Do your research on the show, the tone, if it's an HBO audition, I'm not going to audition the same way as if it were a Disney Channel audition. You know, it's just two different tones, styles, types of show, what the story is, get clear context as to what is happening. NBC's tone is going to be different than ABC's tone, which is going to be different than CBS's tone, which is going to be different than Netflix's tone, which is going to be different than Hulu's tone. So that is important. Just as if it's any job interview, to do tremendous amount of research on the project. The second thing I would say is that if it's a comedy, find your own humor in it. Why do you find that joke funny? You know, and I think if you start from that place, if it makes you laugh, then it can make someone else laugh. If you're just delivering a joke just to deliver a joke, it's not going to be funny because people are not going to see the joy in it. And other than that, I would say hop into a long-term training program that allows you to break down scripts, understand beats and moments and how to entrances and exits and your emotional preparation, stuff like that, because that is something that's something that you just can't replace.
I don't want to make any judgments about actors in LA, but I've heard through speaking with other actors that sometimes there are people in the community that they just jump gun and they go in there and they just think that they can audition without properly doing their homework or without having experience in a theater community or acting backgrounds like acting classes or whatnot. And I think it's so important to be prepared, kind of like any job interview, like you saying, like, be prepared. Now I feel like I'm quoting Scar from The Lion King. Anyway, to be prepared and just to deliver like whatever they're asking for. Honestly, that's what you're there for, is to deliver what they're asking for, whether you get the job or not.
Yeah. I totally agree. The preparation is 100% mixed with, like I said, preparation in your own talent, a long-term investment. You know, acting is just like any other craft. I mean, 0.01% can just show up and be brilliant. For the 99.99% of us rest, we have to put in the hard hours of building a long-term craft. So, you know, I would say that these like one-off acting classes, like 6-week intensive and then you just know is not going to help. You have to dig in and actually train and you know, study under someone that is that, you know, you respect and a technique that you respect. I would, that would be my biggest, you know, advice.
Speaking of auditions, you auditioned for Zoe's with the song Crazy Little Thing Called Love. What inspired you to choose that song for your audition?
I love that you know that. I chose that song because I was obsessed with Queen during that time. And I played the piano. And I remember I was doing a set where I was either I was singing and playing or I was like messing with the arrangement of a bunch of Queen songs. And at the time, one of my favorite songs was Crazy Little Thing Called Love. And it just happened to fit sort of the tone of what they were looking for as to what they wanted to see from me. And so the audition was very last minute. And so I sang Crazy Little Thing Called Love.
I love that. I love that. And I feel like it just shows so much range. Cause like what we saw you sing a No Doubt song on the show, but hearing that you chose that song, it shows that you have versatility and that it opens so many doors for what Tobin could sing down the road.
Thank you. Yeah. I really love old school music too. So, you know, not just modern stuff, not just 90s stuff. I really love singing some of the, you know, slower romantic ballads from the 60s and 70s as well. So maybe, who knows, if we get a second season and if I have that opportunity, I don't know what direction they'll go. So bring your scarf.
Do you have a real life leaf to your Tobin?
I have a couple of real life leaves. I wouldn't call them leaves, but I have friends that I consider are very close to me. You know, the guy named Usama is, you know, my friend Arya, my friend Thunmai, Deep. Like, these guys are people that I've, like, grown up with or, like, have really formed connections. Skylar is slowly becoming one of my closest friends. He's, like, a brother to me, too. So, you know, like, I have a bunch of Leafs, like, my bro-y, like, that I wouldn't even say bro-y. We're super nerdy as it is when we hang out. It's just, you know, there's a lot of love there. There's a lot of brotherhood. And I think it's really important for males to have other male friendships that support each other and not in a like a misogynistic sort of bro-y way. It's like, so if, you know, if we share a sense of sensitivity and empathy, I think those male friendships are so important for any guy to have in his life.
That kind of leads perfectly into my next question, which was, why do you think it's important that there was a storyline between you and Leaf that shows like a straight male relationship in a sensitive way?
Because it's important for males to know that like we can feel and accept that, and that kindness and compassion and empathy is actually strength and not weakness. And so, and actually when you suppress it, you get a lot of anger, you get a lot of resentment, you get a lot of toxic masculinity. Because it's pent up, there's no place for it to sort of release, or there's no place for it to sort of be resolved. You know, that's why we see like the you know, like real men are strong, real men suck it up. And no, I think real men are vulnerable and sensitive and able to show their vulnerability, because that in itself takes a lot of courage. So I think that's what that episode, it was important to explore that like, you know, real friendships share vulnerabilities with each other, including and very especially male friendships need to, I would love to see more of that in that direction. So
100%. And something that like I really, really admire the writers in Austin and the other producers for is just treating like the plot lines and everything with empathy, even though there is elements of comedy and drama, but like a lot of the show is just dealt with a lot of empathy. It's dealt with a lot of like thought, and it's not just written just to be written on a show. Like everything has its purpose, and it just makes the show so much more meaningful as a viewer, like watching that, where we connect with it. We're like, okay, yeah, that is a piece of real life. We deal with stuff like that. We deal with unrequited love. We deal with bumps in our friendships. We deal with, you know, ailing family members. And so I think that just makes it so much more meaningful when we watch it.
Yeah, it talks about issues that, you know, a lot of shows are afraid to talk about. And Austin really does a wonderful job focusing on relationships. I think that's something he has told me that he's very interested in. And it shows how great he is at developing it, this show, really, the relationships between people. Whereas other shows might be focused on the machinations of like getting to the top or like, you know what I mean? I think, yeah, I just think it's wonderful. And I think he's done such a wonderful job at crafting the different story ideas for this show. Yeah.
I love that you said that Tobin kind of creates conflict for Zoe in the workplace. Do you think as we're seeing these different sides of him unfold, he'll still be a point of conflict for Zoe down the road?
I think so. I think he can begin to challenge her in different ways. And, you know, I think conflict can be so many different things, right? It could be a personal conflict. It can be an emotional conflict. It could be a workplace conflict. It could be a leadership conflict. So there's opportunities for Tobin to challenge Zoe in multiple departments down the line.
One of my favorite things about Tobin is this character development. Like truly throughout the season, he was one of the characters that you saw evolve. And when did you feel like Tobin was adding more dimension to his persona in the season?
I think the episode when I read it that I was like, okay, Tobin's changing, is episode 8. When he makes a conscious decision to be better at his job, to stop making sexist jokes, to be more considerate of the people around him. Because I think Leaf is like, yo, dude, like you better get your game together. Like it was a wake-up call for the fact that the idea of who he wanted to be was not who he was. And so I think that change saw a lot of the real Tobin of like what he actually cares about and not his identity based off of his friend. It's his like identity based off of who he really is. And so I think he just became more of what he actually is and less of what he was trying to be. And I think that showed that like unraveled a lot of the character, and you got to see the ASL episode be like, wow, that's surprising. I can't believe this person is like that. And it just, you know, goes to show that like, you know, Tobin is not what you see up front. Like when you meet Tobin, you know, there's a lot of stuff that is underneath it.
What makes the Zoe's cast a family?
We're on group chats together. We love going out and like having, you know, a cocktail at the end of the night together just to celebrate like a tough shoot day. I have never met a more supportive, friendly cast, despite all the giant names that we have in this cast. Like all the people that you'd ever think were intimidating are absolute sweeties, and they are, you know, just the best. And I could tell you lovely stories about each one of them. I mean, they're just the best, and I really care about them.
You guys, like just seeing like little bits on Instagram, I'm like, oh my God, I wish I was a part of that family. You guys are so close knit. Yeah. I love all you like the hangouts that you guys do together. And I just, I love that. And I love seeing a cast that close because sometimes that's not the case with a lot of projects. And to see that you guys are like a close knit family, it really warms my heart.
No, we're very lucky. We're very lucky that we all really, really get along and respect and love each other's work and are, you know, as people as well. So
something truly masterful about the show is the human representation. It's not just about diversity, but there is so much representation in different groups. What's it like to be a part of a major network television show that cares that much about representation?
It's wonderful. It's great to see that I am part of that and being part of a project that values that, because that's something that I value. So it's very heartening to see the investment into something like that.
If you could play any Disney character, who would you play?
Aladdin, done.
Yes. You would make the perfect Aladdin. Wait, wasn't there a story that you auditioned to be Aladdin on Broadway?
I did. This is for the Broadway version of Aladdin and the movie version. Yeah, I did. That was several years ago now. It was 3 or 4 years ago. And I went through the rounds of the auditions, but I never ended up booking either of those, you know, which for whatever reason, you know, destiny, this didn't happen, but maybe one day.
Maybe one day. Yeah. We'll see you as Aladdin, be it either on Broadway or another film incarnation of it. I would love to see you as Aladdin.
I would love to do it. I mean, Mina did a great job, but, you know, obviously I'm like, I wanted to do it. So, you know, maybe one day, who knows?
If you were to teach a master class on any subject, what would it be?
A master class on any subject. Gosh, I don't know if I'm a master at any subject, but I think public speaking or the SATs. Because I was a tutor for years in LA. So I know a lot about the SATs. I know a lot about like playing piano, writing music, playing guitar. I could probably teach that. But public speaking, I've taught public speaking before, the fundamentals of good speech and voice and posture and stuff like that when making presentations and debates and job interviews. But honestly, I don't know if I'm a master. I feel like I haven't done my 10,000 hours in anything. So, those are the things that just off the top of my head, and maybe acting in like 20 years. So like, those are the things that I would say that like are headed towards me possibly teaching that one day as a master class. But right now I'm just a apprentice of those things.
I would love to take your acting master class once you do teach it, because honestly, like you on Zoe's, I never laughed harder at so many of your Tobinisms. I'm actually doing this like 20-day Zoe's challenge, and one of like the squares of the days that I reserved was the best Tobinism. Like, so I'm like curious as to what people are going to reply with.
There are so many like Tobin jokes that actually didn't make it in. Yeah, there's some really funny ones that I was like, they didn't use that one. That's okay. But they used some, they also used some that I was like, I didn't even know they were going to use that at all. And it ended up being really funny. So it works both ways. You know, there's some improvs that they included, but generally like most of it was scripted. But yeah, there's some really funny Tobin jokes that didn't end up making the final cut, but it's all right. Whatever.
Oh, I think one of my favorite Tobin jokes, and I think I might actually use it for the day that I do this, but I think one of my favorite Tobin jokes was when after Max and Zoe had the huge fight in the bathroom, you just walk in, you're like, sup Max, sup Zoe. So are we gossiping about somebody? I like that was, oh my God.
Tell me who it is. I don't know. You know, okay, so funny story about that one. That was actually the way it was used. Here's a secret for this. That we did a bunch of different takes with a bunch of different options for that line. One of the options was like, hey, Zoe, you're in the men's. Oh, I always know you had a, all right, nope, don't do it. Tobin 2.0, right? That was one of them. The other one was, I can't remember them all, but we had a bunch of alts for that joke. And it was actually delivered straight to Zoe. So one of the alts was, sup, dude, sup, Zoe. And then he doesn't say anything, goes in. They actually used the line from one of the other alts and used it as if I was in the bathroom.
Oh, my God. I love that.
So I didn't actually say anything in the bathroom, but they used it from one of the things that I said directly to Zoe's face, you know? So that was really a fun, like watching it. I was like, what? You took the audio from the other thing and then put it as, so I got a double joke in there.
It just worked out so perfectly. I was like that, because it broke the tension of that heated moment. And you're just like, that's why I left open. Because it's just spot on timing like that. It was so genius. Oh my gosh, it all came together so well.
I think the character is great to remind people that like, life is serious, but there's some things that you don't need to take so seriously.
100%.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. So my last question is, what advice would you give to fellow creatives out there while they're on their journey?
Keep on creating in whatever way possible. Keep on creating as much as you can. Don't worry if it's bad. Just like put the content out there, because you go through the river of suck to get to the ocean of awesome.
I love that. Because everybody, I feel like, drives the struggle bus, and they're wondering if they're alone driving that struggle bus. But I'm like, no, everybody does, especially creatives. If anybody knows about driving the struggle bus, we do. We drive it to Struggle Nation. You know what I mean? And so, yeah, like it takes sucky, like you said, to get to awesome.
Yes. One thing that I've always remember someone telling me when I first got to LA is that the finished products that we see on TV often have 50, 60, 70 revisions before people even see the script into TV into light of day. So if you're on revision one, you got 50 more to go, you know? So just even if it's like the worst thing that you've ever written, it could eventually turn out into something really, really nice with a ton of revisions, you know? So that's something important to keep in mind, that everyone goes through that, including the best of the best in Hollywood.
Kapil, this has been a wonderful chat. I feel like I've been grabbing coffee with a friend, and it's been such a blessing to get like a little touch of Zoe's in my day. So I'm going to turn the floor over to you. We're going to pull a Hot Ones, and you can plug your social media or maybe something upcoming that you have in the works, whatever you want to like promote.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, I don't really have much to plug, but like you can follow me on my social media at KTALWALK. Or on Twitter at Kapil Tallwalker, just my name. I had a couple projects coming up as right before the quarantine. There was a Netflix show called Special that I was going to do, you know, three or four episodes on. And that obviously got pushed. Hopefully I get to shoot it again and get to do it. But yeah, thanks for having me. This has been so fun. So cool talking about all the important stuff that I actually like to talk about. So you've done amazing research and I had a wonderful time just like talking about this stuff. It's like really some really, really great questions.
Thank you. I had a blast chatting with you. Yeah, like I said, I've been wanting to speak with somebody from my favorite TV show for the longest time. And it was an absolute joy talking to you. I love Tobin. I love the character of Tobin. And you do such a great job with him, because it not only takes great lines, but it takes a great actor to deliver them in a way that the show needs. And you do that amazingly with Tobin. So thank you so much for, spending time with me.
Yeah, of course.
Thank you to Kapil for being our season finale. I think it was a great episode to end our season on. And the takeaway that I got from his episode was not being afraid to have those difficult discussions, especially when it comes to your passions. It might be uncomfortable to explain to somebody why you'd rather pursue your dreams than chase after that ginormous paycheck. But after you unpack those things and communicate how you really feel about what you're dreaming about, think that in a result will make you have a happier life. To find more about Kapil, visit the links in the show notes.
Pop Nerd Lounge is a two-man operation, rather I should say two-women operation. It is executive produced by Steph Pham and V. Co. V. Co. serves as the show's creative director, and Steph Pham is the show's host and editor. You can find us on social media at Pop Nerd Lounge. For an easy, convenient hub of everything Pop Nerd Lounge, visit our website, popnerdlounge.com. That's it for this week. Tune in next time for another conversation with a fellow creative. I'm Steph Pham.